Thanks for listening to this podcast. I'm Bob Kinzel, co-host of Vermont Edition. Just wanted to let you know that this has been edited for brevity. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Bob Kinzel, sitting in for Jane Lindholm. One of the biggest issues of the legislative session is a bill that would address water quality issues in Lake Champlain and other lakes and streams throughout the state. Legislation passed by the Senate sets up a new regional distribution system for the allocation of thousands of grants in the future, but the bill does not include a long-term funding source. That decision will be made later in the session as the House considers a number of revenue sources. Well, how does the Senate bill address the water cleanup issue? What parts of the state are in crisis, and what's the consequence of not dealing with this issue this year? These are a few of the questions we'll tackle today on Vermont Edition. And our guest in the first part of the program is Addison County Senator Chris Bray. Senator Bray is the chairman of the Senate Natural Resources Committee and a person who's been working closely on these water quality issues for a number of years. Chris, great to have you on the program.
Nice to be back. Good to see you, Bob.
So, Chris, let's just start with an overview of this bill. It has several major goals. Tell us about it.
Sure. And just for a little bit of background to remind voters that back in 2015, we passed the Vermont Clean Water Act that sent us on the pathway to really picking up and improving water quality work throughout the state. Every year we come back and revisit that work to try to make improvements and enhancements. And as we've sat down this year and developed S-96 in the Senate, we identified two problems. One is that all but one major waterway in Vermont is legally impaired. And for each impaired waterway, the state is legally obligated to develop a remediation plan, a cleanup plan, also known as a TMDL. And after 25 years, though, we still haven't closed out, completed a TMDL. And, you know, we're assessing why we're making progress, but why not enough to close out a TMDL? And the simple answer is the state has regulatory programs. Those are the ones we issue permits for, like a water quality permit. But we also have non-regulatory programs. And what's become clear in our analysis and working with ANR is that roughly 40% of the cleanup will have to come out of these non-regulatory programs. And right now, the state lacks the capacity to manage the number of non-regulatory programs that we need to implement in order to achieve our water quality goals.
So let's be clear on this because this sounds like a very important point. The regulatory side of this, as you mentioned, are things like stormwater permits, things that people need permits from the state of Vermont for?
Right. So,
and the non-regulatory would be what?
Those are, refer to them as clean water projects, and they include things like wetlands restoration, floodplain restoration, stream bank stabilization, building out river corridor buffers, livestock exclusion from streams on farms, and there's a whole variety of programs. So they're not something you get a permit for, but they definitely contribute to water quality.
And this bill addresses those concerns and funnels money in those directions?
Exactly. So ANR's estimate was that roughly 60% of our work effort should be in the regulatory programs, the traditional programs everyone's already familiar with, but around 40% should be in these non-regulatory programs that I was just making the list with you about. Mm-hmm. And then we're looking at, well, how do we deliver these non-regulatory programs? And there are about 1,000 such projects implemented a year. They're relatively modest in cost, between $10,000 and $50,000. And they're distributed all over the state. So there's a lot of planning and implementation work in order to put these programs out. ANR has only roughly added 13 staff since we passed the Clean Water Act. 13 staff aren't going to manage 1,000-plus programs all over the state. So how do we do it? We have local partners. We have some longstanding relationships with roughly 336 towns, conservation districts, regional planning commissions, river conservation groups, our partners all over the state. And what this bill does, it says we need to firm up that working relationship with all those groups and make sure that when we spend water quality dollars, that we know what kind of return on investment we're getting. Right now, we often talk about how much money we spend, but really what we're interested in is clean water and seeing the phosphorus reduction, for instance, in the Lake Champlain Basin.
So I think a fair number of people believe that the agriculture sector is responsible for a lot of this problem. Put it in perspective for us. How much of this responsibility falls on farms in Vermont?
Sure. So it varies by location. We have, although a lot of times people hear about the TMDL, the cleanup plan for Lake Champlain, there are another 10-plus TMDLs around the state, Lake Carmi, Lake Memphremagog, one's coming for the Connecticut River. So I just want to be clear that this water quality work happens everywhere in the state. And so you have to go basin by basin to identify the contributors to the challenge for each such basin. But since Lake Champlain's the biggest, with 136 towns in the Lake Champlain Basin, it's roughly 50% of the problem comes out of agriculture. And then all the other land uses contribute the other 50%.
We did get these comments online at our Facebook site. Misty wrote, "How about fining the towns and cities that keep, quote, accidentally dumping into the lake?" And Dan is a farmer in Wheelock who wrote us, "Many of us with farms have made huge efforts to deal with our cow manure so the runoff stays out of the swimming and drinking water. So you city folk, do your part and stop dumping in the lakes." We hear about these dumps that happen in different parts of the state. How much of a problem is that?
Sure. So combined sewer over everyone wants good, clean water. There are different challenges to our water quality problem. One of them is the kind of nutrient loading that comes out of agriculture. Excess phosphorus going into the lake, supporting algae blooms, making, you know, green pea soup green water. No one wants that. Mm-hmm. The kind of events that people are talking about, these overflows at the municipal level, these are short-term overflows. They're actually permitted by the Department of Environmental Conservation, and they are part of an old design that says when the stormwater received at a wastewater treatment facility is going to overwhelm that facility, divert the water directly to waters of the state. So it is true that we don't want raw septage flowing untreated into any body of water. And over time, we're modifying wastewater treatment facilities to accommodate the increased challenge from very heavy rain events. For instance, the last 2 days, mm-hmm. there have been a lot of places where wastewater treatment facilities can't handle the volume of heavy rain that that we currently get.
Let's go to our callers and talk to Stacy, who's calling from Morrisville. Hi, Stacy. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thank you. I would like to see the state have more emphasis on prevention. And by that, I mean individually, you know, the cleaning products we use, the cleaning products that the resorts use that are near aquifers, for example. You go to any store and there's just tons of toxic chemicals that don't belong in the water that are sold all the time.
Stacy, thanks very much for your phone call. How much of this problem is kind of personal responsibility, as Stacy mentioned?
That's a good question. I'd say in terms of major potential sources, for instance, all agriculture is private. So you could say that's a personal obligation, how you manage your farm. And then after that, when you get to municipal contributions, I mean, there are many, 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 you know, thousands of small lots where the individual contribution may be modest, but they all add up. And so that's where it shifts from being a focus on the individual to focus on how the municipality acts on behalf of all the citizens in that municipality to treat and address their collective impact.
Let's talk to James in Middlebury. Hey, James, welcome to the program.
Thank you. A little while ago, you asked Senator Bray what percentage of the problem in the lake was agriculture, and he said 50%, but then he kind of moved off into other things. I'd like to know, Act 64, Vermont's so-called Clean Water Act, does not regulate or even mention the nutrients that conventional dairy brings into the state, namely NPK fertilizer, imported feed, and the third thing that conventional dairy does is overstocking. Would Christopher Bray please address why the state leaves those issues out when dairy is such a huge contributor?
Well, thanks for the question, James. Always good to hear from you. I'd say on terms of NPK fertilizer, especially phosphorus in the Lake Champlain Basin, we have looked at that, and we are currently in phosphorus excess, and we're actively working to limit the flow of phosphorus off of farms through changing farming practices. So although we don't name phosphorus in the Act itself, the required agricultural practices, which were a requirement of the Act, they were developed following the passage of the Act, they do address every nutrient on a farm and its potential impact on waters of the state.
When you had the bill in your Senate committee, you considered having a funding source, a long-term funding source, and that for a couple of years you've been quite supportive of having a per-parcel fee across the state of Vermont. Why do you think you haven't been successful in convincing your colleagues that that's the approach that should be taken?
That's a great question. Honestly, I don't know the answer, but part of the reason I put it in is that if we're going to talk about water quality work, I wanted to make sure that we had a conversation about how we're going to fund that work. And in the State House, one way to ensure that you have a conversation is you put it into a bill and you put it on the table and you circulate it publicly. So from that point of view, S-260 last year and S-96 both have achieved their purpose. We've moved a bill forward. We've triggered a conversation in the building about how to sort this out. But we respectfully know that as a policy committee, we are not one of the two money committees, finance and appropriations. So our colleagues down the hall are expert on how to raise the revenues and appropriations on how to fund the program. And we're relying on them. It's really a team effort. Different committees have different expertise. And so our obligation, I think, is to be focused on ensuring that when we ask the fellow senators to vote for something, that we know we are delivering the most cost-effective, most robust program we can so that people will have confidence that this is a good thing to invest in.
And as you look at this philosophically from a tax revenue source, do you have the feeling it should be something that this is a state problem and therefore all taxpayers in the state should be responsible for helping clean it up? Or should the focus be more narrow than that?
I don't know where we'll end up on it. I'll be honest, my gut sense is that a broader-based source of income is helpful and maybe appropriate. I guess I'd say appropriate because water is essential to every one of us, regardless of where we live. We're all connected to it. We all rely on it, and it's too easy to take for granted. So since we all count on it, I hope that in one way or another we'll all chip in. And I should remind everyone that we already do. I mean, because there's a broad array of taxes and general fund dollars that are raised broadly in the state already. So whether or not a new fee is tied particularly to water quality or not, every Vermonter is already contributing and will continue to contribute.
And that would be through things like the state's capital bill and property transfer tax?
Exactly.
How confident are you that when this session is over, if we're talking on the last day of the session, that this issue has a long-term funding source and that this bill is going to pass?
I would say I'd say I'm 100% confident we will have a robust funding for this program and that it will pass. It's work that it's essential. I think I also want to remind people that we have an obligation to the EPA in order to make sure that we have a water quality program. This is we have an obligation to ourselves as Vermonters under the Vermont Clean Water Act, but we also have a federal obligation. And So we have to meet that those obligations federally. And the only way to do that is to have a program in place. And so I'm sure we're going to move a program forward.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Wren, who's calling from Stowe. Hi, Wren. Welcome to the program.
How are you?
Good.
I just wanted to ask your guest once again, since I didn't hear an answer to how much is the sewage runoff contributing to the pollution. He went on to define why that occurs and said it was permitted, but just because it's permitted doesn't make it right. It's been an issue for a long, long time, and I got a feeling that because of the cost, you're burying your head in the sand and you're not really addressing this.
Well, thanks for coming back to that. So, yes, it's a very different problem than I'll stick with phosphorus. Our phosphorus challenge, where it's kind of like a trickle charge. Sometimes there's a bigger dose, but we are trickle charging phosphorus into waterways continually. These combined sewer overflows, as they're known, are event driven and they're short term. The nutrient, it's not a nutrient issue on a combined sewer overflow. It's actually that you end up with things like E. coli, right, in the water. Happily enough, nature has a way of sunlight, for instance, killing them off, and it's usually a passing problem 1 to 3 days before sunlight and oxygen has rendered that E. coli harmless. I'm not excusing it in any way. It's not something we want to tolerate. Municipalities are making very large investments to upgrade their wastewater treatment facilities. For instance, Burlington just did a $30 million bond. We looked at bonds earlier. St. Albans several years back did $25 million. St. Jay in the order of $20 million. So all around the state, municipality by municipality, they are making upgrades. And the state has a large revolving loan fund that they draw on. It has roughly $70 million in it. And that will continue to be used in order to float municipal bonds. And those municipalities will be stepping up to make increasing investments over time. Part of what's happening, I mentioned, was we get heavy rain events that are unlike what we used to have roughly 50 years ago. A lot of these plants are 50 years old or even older. So the environment has changed and it's wreaking havoc, with these systems. So everyone knows we need to upgrade the systems. The upgrades are happening. Would we like to go faster? Sure. Every municipality has to figure out its own ability to support the work that they need to undertake.
Today in the program, we're examining water quality legislation that's being considered by lawmakers this session. With us today, Addison Senator Chris Bray, who is the chairman of the Senate Natural Resources Committee. We're also joined at this time by John Groveman, who's the policy director at the Vermont Natural Resources Council, a group that's been following this issue very closely. John, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me, Bob.
So, John, give us some of your general thoughts about this bill. Chris Bray, in the first part of the program, outlined for us how it's going to work. What do you think of it?
We've been at this, as Senator Bray said. I'm glad that he took us back to 2015 because it's really important to have the context for why we're even talking about this and how long we've been working on both water quality and the funding part of it. And I really feel we had a breakthrough this year because we had the administration, the advocacy groups, and the legislative committees really on the same page for the first time. I think the legislature and a lot of the environmental advocates have been on the same page for a while that we need this money if we're going to meet our clean water goals, and we need a way to get the money out there on the ground.
So when you were talking about a breakthrough, it's the fact that the Scott administration proposed using the estate tax?
I'm saying that they acknowledge that we need money and that we need a way to prioritize how to spend it. In the previous years, there was a debate about do we even need the money and how much money do we need. And we couldn't agree on that, so we never really got to the other part, which was, well, how do we prioritize it? So, yeah, so I as we've talked about before, I give the administration credit for putting a funding idea out there on the table and acknowledging we need the money if we're going to meet our clean water goals and our obligations to EPA and to the Vermont Clean Water Act.
Senator Bray also outlined for us a slightly different distribution model for the granting of these monies. How do you feel about that?
I feel that it could work. You know, I think it's there's a lot of different ways to do this. VNRC and a bunch of other groups, we worked on a centralized model last year that we went before Senator Bray's committee on, and there just wasn't obviously people didn't like that model, and they didn't really want to go that way, and that's okay. There's definitely not one way to do this. And then the administration came in with this regional model, and VNRC and many other groups and the committees have grinded through that model. It's changed a lot. I think the senator would agree with me. And I think it's to a point that the model could work. It's changing more in the House. I came here from a meeting this morning. We got back a new version of the model from the agency with even more changes. So it's evolving as we speak. VNRC is comfortable with the model where it's at. I think there are some groups out there, some of the watershed groups and conservation districts that have received a lot of these funds, that they have certain concerns. I think the gap is closing in terms of their concerns about the model. I think our biggest concern right now with the model is how much money is going to go for non-really targeted phosphorus reduction, because there are these ecological projects that have they reduce phosphorus, but they have other ecological benefits. And we've funded those projects fairly significantly over the last several years. And we're having a debate. The administration is proposing $1.5 million to spend on that. I think we'd like to see it to be closer to $5 million. And that's something that's emerged in the House. And Senator Bray has not been privy to sort of that evolving conversation. But I think the model itself is less concerning than kind of the breakup of the money and how we spend it.
And are you talking about, Senator Bray was telling us about 60% regulatory, 40% non-regulatory. Are you talking about the non-regulatory issues here?
These are all in the non-regulatory category. I completely agree with Senator Bray how he characterized it. If we don't fund these non-regulatory projects, we're not going to meet our TMDL obligation. But there are other obligations in the Vermont Clean Water Act that passed in 2015 goes beyond phosphorus. It protects our highest quality waters. We have other water quality problems besides just phosphorus. So I don't know if you remember in 2015, there was the all-in sort of tagline that went along with water quality. We're all in it. It's all over the state. Yes, it's Lake Champlain, but there are other water quality issues. I think we're talking about within that non-regulatory category, how much is dedicated purely to phosphorus reduction and how much can go for a broader class of projects. And the agency is proposing $1.5 million, and we'd like to see it to be a larger number.
Senator Bray, I mean, would it be reasonable to think that 40% of the problem needs 40% of the funding?
Well, that's a good question. And, you know, I don't know the answer, and I think we will learn as we do the work. I mean, one of the things we didn't get into yet is that what this new model talks about is a phosphorus reduction target per region, and then the partners in that region work together to develop the most cost-effective way to deliver that reduction so that we're trying to shift ourselves away from just talking about dollars as a way to figure out how well or how seriously we're approaching water quality work in Vermont to actually measuring the impact in terms of cleaning up water and reducing phosphorus, for instance. So we're shifting to spending money based on results, and I think that's a very positive thing. But I want to pick up on something that John just mentioned, and that is we don't want to become hyper-focused just on phosphorus reduction. There are high-quality waters of the state. They're excellent for recreation. They're excellent habitat. And we want to make sure that we don't focus so much on the problem areas that we don't put in an effort to keep high-quality waters of the state in that condition, because it takes an effort across the entire watershed.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Liam, who's calling from Fairfax. Hi, Liam. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for taking my question. My question for the guest today is, as the raising funding for this $60 million shortfall you seem to have relates to the push and pull between taxpayer-funded or maybe private entity or, you know, the responsible parties for pollution-funded, is there any information or consideration given to the fact that, you know, over time we legislate and change the laws regarding what it is and isn't legal to dump or different substances. Is there any consideration given to the parties responsible for polluting when they did that, if what they were doing was legal or extra legal? And if so, does that contribute to how you're looking at the funding picture?
Well, so this reminds me more of situations like what we had in Bennington, where there's a water quality problem, but it's the result of of manufacturing discharges. That's where we have conversations for the most part around liability. And this year in the Senate, actually, a whole series of bills have all been oriented to reducing the exposure of Vermonters to toxic substances in water. The Clean Water Bill is actually focused for the most part on, you know, benign things like phosphorus and nitrogen. They're both essential nutrients, and but in excess, they cause problems in waterways.
John Groveman, when the Senate passed this bill, you were pretty critical of the Senate for not including a funding source, a very specific long-term funding source in the legislation. Can we take it from that you support the governor's approach using the estate tax, or if you don't support that, what do you support?
Yeah, so my criticism was that, and I think my quote was something like, we've been at this for 3-4 years now, and every time we get close to actually establishing the long-term stable funding, we just don't get there. So it makes us very uneasy and nervous. We got to another juncture, and we still didn't have the money in the bill. And just to be fair, Senator Bray's job and committee focused on, you know, he's not a money committee, so his work was focused on the distribution model. When the bill got to the money committees, a decision was made to move it to the House so the House would figure out the funding. And, you know, we would have preferred and we thought that the Senate was going to put its marker down, because to the second part of your question, we don't support an estate tax because it's an existing source of revenue. That, you know, all along the Treasurer's report, it presumed that there was going to be new revenue for this. If you look at the report, just look at the executive summary, right? When you open it up, it's not saying we're going to shift revenues within state government. As you know, as your listeners know, there's all kind of needs throughout state government. There's not extra money. The budget every year is tight, and there's a battle for funds. And we don't want to borrow from Peter to pay Paul. And that's really our objection to the governor's proposal, while we're very pleased he recognizes the need for water funding. So we were looking for the Senate to put its marker down. Here's what we think the revenue sources should be. Senator Bray has been very clear. I think he, for a long time, been talking about some sort of per parcel fee, impervious surface fee, which could absolutely work. But it's about what's politically feasible. And that's something that just doesn't seem to have the broad support in the legislature. We're open to what the House did last year. They had a rooms and meals tax surcharge that raised money. We would support – there's been an idea about increasing the bottle bill from 5 cents to 10 cents to raise money. There have been ideas about taxes on certain industries, like mining industries, that have pollutant effects on waters, fees related to agriculture processes. We're open to all of these ideas. We really want the revenue to be stable so it's there every year, so we don't have to worry whether or not we're going to have the money. And we think it should have some tie to pollutants, the pollutants we're dealing with. But, you know, we're not there dictating to the legislature it has to be this or it has to be that.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to Rudy, who's calling from Waterville. Hi, Rudy. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I recently visited a farm with my daughter's preschool on a field trip, and we noticed a couple of the parents noticed really large piles of manure piled right up right on a hillside that was going, you know, right down to the river. So, you know, we kind of looked and we can notice where the manure was going right down into the, you know, directly into the Lamoille River. And my question is, how can we better connect and communicate in a respectful way with the farmers to try to change this?
Senator Bray?
Well, so honestly, there are rules around if you're seeing piles of manure. It's often referred to as stacking. Fields may be too wet to be out working in them, so that farms will actually work with the Agency of Agriculture to define an appropriate location. That's not supposed to be in any kind of spot where you'd ever say, well, when it rains hard enough, that is going to wash down into a river. So I'm not sure what's going on in the particular case you have, but there are rules around how manure gets stacked, and you're absolutely right. We expect those rules to drive best practices so that we don't have that kind of problem. You could have, if you're willing, you know, I think you might just ask the farmer what's going on. You could simply say directly, if he's, especially if he's a neighbor, say, I'm wondering about how that's being affected by rain. Is there runoff going into the lake? I mean, into the river there. It may or may not. I don't know the situation, but I think whenever I have a complaint, I always like to go to the person that I have the concern with and ask them first.
Let's go back to our callers and talk to John, who is calling from Norwich. Hey, John, what's on your mind today?
Today, well, what's going on is I'm a truck driver, and I've been going by the ski areas now that have over snowpack, and I'm watching the rivers and the streams down through, and the rivers that are coming, or the streams that are coming off the ski areas are running brown because there's too much water coming down through. But when you look at some of the other streams that are natural, they're running clear. And what it's doing is it's starting to do a 100-year flood every year for those rivers. Is there anything that we're thinking about doing with the ski areas on that?
Chris Bray?
Sure. Well, we have all the ski areas are highly permitted in terms of how they handle stormwater. And but as we've talked a couple points during this session, what I mean this conversation, we're seeing heavier rain events than we used to, and everyone knows right now Vermont's experiencing flooding all over the state. So there are times when even the best management practices get overwhelmed by the amount of water that's moving through. And the problems are just as the caller notes. When you get volume increasing, you start tearing out stream banks and you start picking up the silt, and then you carry those nutrients downstream and it causes environmental problems.
Yeah, I would just say, I mean, the caller is right. This is it's a seasonal perennial problem. We've done a lot of work. Most of the skiers actually, the waters surrounding them have been designated polluted, and they have been under orders from the Natural Resources Agency in Vermont to have better practices, to manage their parking lots better, their development right around these tributaries. But this is what happens. This is why it's really important for ski areas. They're in the headwaters. They really, you know, they are under scrutiny for good reason. We're doing a lot better than we used to, which is, you know, but we obviously have a ways to go because we're going to get these events every year. And as Senator Bray said, with climate change, it's going to, you know, be harder to manage.
Almost out of time, Senator Bray told us earlier in the program that he has confidence that the legislature is going to address this issue this year and not kick the can down the road to 2020. Do you share his confidence?
I'm more confident than I've ever been before, but I'm still like, and it's one of those things that you have to see it to believe it. It's just very difficult to do. I do feel, you know, there's a different sense in the building. There's a different sense that we need to make this happen this year. I'll give a lot of credit to Representative Ansel, who's the chair of Ways and Means. You know, I've been in her committee, and she seems really focused, and her committee does. I don't know what revenue sources are going to come up with, but I think, and I think having the administration out there saying, we have this gap, the 40% that Senator Bray is talking about. If we don't raise the money and implement these projects, we're not going to meet our load reduction targets, and we're going to not have clean water, and we're going to be in violation of EPA orders. And so, I think it's pretty clear, and I think the senator would agree. We don't really at this point. We're all in agreement. If we don't do this, you know, we're not going to get to where we need, where we want to be, and where legally we were supposed to be.
Right. My confidence is that we'll assemble an adequate amount of money to take on a robust program. I don't know what those revenue sources will be, and I don't actually think we're going to have a sort of a new clean water fund revenue source named. You know, it will have the exact name of it's the clean water money. I think it will always be a blend of many revenues. And what I am confident about is that my colleagues are serious about addressing this, and that we will sort this out at the, you know, before we adjourn.
We're going to be following this issue very closely as the session continues. Many thanks to our guest today, Senate Natural Resources Committee Chairman Chris Bray. Also, John Groveman, Policy Director at the Vermont Natural Resources Council. We really appreciate you coming by and talking to us about this issue.
Thanks again.
Yeah, thanks, Bob.